Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day. Chris Brown's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women.
Here's the snap. Back to pass. Blitz coming. Wide open, Ray Davis. 45-50. 45-40. Still on his feet. He's going to go 20, 10, 5, touchdown, Ray Davis, 63 yards.
Chris Brown's call of the Ray Davis big play. Bills get the win. They are 7-2, which marks the best mark, the best nine-game start under Sean McDermott with these Bills. They were 7-2 back in 2020 as well. To the Western Hotline to talk with Chris Brown. Chris, as you're getting ready to call that 61-yard field goal attempt for Tyler Bass. You know, it's kind of a beautiful moment. I feel like Bills fans ride this ride with the team, follow the team very closely and the players, and everybody would have known what that field goal meant, not only for the game, but for the player as well.
Yes, and you kind of felt like, sure, there are always naysayers that, you know, get disenchanted with a player that's struggling and, oh, get rid of the guy, get him out of here, get somebody else. And I think there's a strong faction of Bills fans where if you've put work in and you've helped this team before, they'll hang with you and pull for you. And I kind of felt like there was a strong faction of Bills fans pulling for Tyler Bass to pull himself out of the struggles that he's had stretching back to late last season. You know, it got to a point where, you know, they had a practice squad kicker on this roster 2 weeks ago just to serve as a little extra motivation. And we've said it on our show on One Bills Live, just to quote Sean McDermott, when Tyler Bass is right, he's a weapon for this football team. And we haven't seen it in a while, but we saw it at the end of the game yesterday. He's a weapon for this football team, and he's now 9-for-9. In the last minute of the fourth quarter in overtime on field goals. And it's the second time he sunk the Dolphins, because he did it in 2022 in that December game where it started snowing at the end. Kicked the game-winning field goal there. Granted, it was only 25 yards, but he's put them to bed a couple of times now.
Bills get the win. Your overall take on the game coming out of it, it was a back-and-forth affair. First half looked a lot different than the second half, and both these teams were able to work the ball down the field with the run, with the pass. We saw long drives from both squads.
Yeah, the second half, things kind of picked up precipitously, and Eric and I on the broadcast were even talking about how the end of the game looked like the start of the game last year in week four. When the offenses just went back and forth, touchdown, 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 touchdown. That's how it was at the end of the game yesterday. Really made for an exciting second half. You just didn't know where it was going to end. You know, defensively, I think you kind of expected that to some degree from Miami, which was shorthanded due to injury. But then, you know, the Bills lose a couple of defensive ends to injury in the second half. You know, they've got backups playing in the secondary. Setting the edge in the run front was a problem. Some run plays got out of the gate on the edges there, which you don't typically see from a Bills defense. So that's going to have to be corrected this week, and it kind of led to some gains. I was just so surprised how Miami's offense was so effective and efficient with the dink and dunk game. They really didn't try to stretch the field at all yesterday, and really didn't have to, because a lot of their, you know, throws to the flat and screen plays were effective in moving the sticks for them on a consistent basis.
The Dolphins sticking to the run game in this game, Chris, how demoralizing it must be from their standpoint, because it felt like that's the game plan they've wanted to execute against the Bills in the past. They finally get it, and they just still can't win. They just still can't win here. Like, it's no matter what game plan style they come out with, the Bills just continue to have their number.
Yeah, they just can't get past them. And there are teams like that that for stretches will just have your number. And, I mean, I think it's safe to say that the Bills have the Dolphins' number. I mean, they haven't won here since 2016. And, you know, that was an overtime game. And the Bills had 10 players on the field. And Jay Ajayi's running down the sidelines. You know, that's a previous coaching regime. I mean, Sean McDermott's never lost to the Dolphins at home. It's just it's crazy to say that, knowing he's in his eighth season. And, you know, we should probably also mention that Sean McDermott, now at 80 wins, becomes the 13th head coach in league history with 80 victories in his first eight seasons. And if you look at that list, there's four Hall of Famers and probably five other guys that are going to the Hall of Fame. So it's pretty prestigious company.
Bills able to get through a number of injuries in this game. You mentioned the guys that went out. No Christian Benford. No Amari Cooper. With the Cooper side of it, Chris, do you feel like you could tell that they were missing him? It's only been two games with him. Sample size is small. Matchups matter. But no Cooper on the outside. It's not something I think I want to experiment with for too long.
Right. It kind of felt as though the passing game was feeling its way without Cooper in the first half. I mean, maybe that's not the main reason that they ran into some struggles, but I feel it did play a factor. And then, you know, once again, halftime, trying to reset the table and coming out effective in the second half again was encouraging. The red zone was a particular problem in the first half because, you know, you had a situation where you go 0-for-3 in the red zone the first half, you're fortunate to only be down 10-6. That was where I feel Miami really had a chance to put a dagger in the Bills, and they didn't do it. And they ended up paying for it in the end. But, yeah, you got to hope Cooper's okay. Wrist injuries suddenly are the soup du jour for the Bills' injury list because DeJuan Smoot goes out with a wrist injury yesterday. You already got Benford and Cooper with wrist injuries. You got Dwayne Carter on IR with a wrist injury that required surgery. So let's just hope that's the end of those.
Yeah, this is another game where, like, guys that are just kind of depth pieces at this point end up making big plays for them. I mean, Morris is in the right spot on somehow Allen getting that ball to him. And Matt Collins maybe has his best day because he caught every target that was thrown his way. But, Chris, like, Ray Davis's play, I mean, that's such an impressive run by him after the catch. And it just kind of feels like no matter who is in there at running back, like, and for fans, maybe this is true. Like, in the past, it's, oh, why is this guy in? Why are we in this formation? Why is this running back in? And right now, no matter who's in the ball game at running back, it just feels like all three are doing pretty well. And they're all kind of their own different version.
Yeah, they're doing a great job. And they probably haven't gotten enough credit. They have been touchdown machines for this team. I mean, all three of them have had multiple touchdowns. I think Ty Johnson only has receiving touchdowns. I don't know if he's got a rushing touchdown yet this season. Maybe he does. But they've all impacted the game on the ground and through the air. So it's a great collection of talent there, and they've all helped through the course of the season. And I almost kind of thought about it on the way home from the game. You know, the longest scoring play in James Cook's career is the 49-yard touchdown that he ran against Miami in week two down, you know, for his third touchdown of the game against them. And then Ray Davis rips off a 63-yarder. Granted, it was a reception, but I don't know. This trio of backs, I don't think they're getting enough credit. They've been outstanding, like, from the jump when the season started.
Chris, I'll be the first one to use this phrase that I do not subscribe to. I'm going to put that out there. But, you know, the Colts this week, the Chiefs next week. Trap game, I'm sure. On your show, you'll hear it. We'll hear, you know, the idea, like, overlooking. But that's not something I feel like I ever worry about with a Sean McDermott team or a Josh Allen team. It just, they don't seem to trip in these spots, knock on wood. You know, get the job done, Indianapolis, whatever happens at quarterback, we'll wait to see. But I'm not going to be worried about that, even though I'm sure we'll have to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have to maybe most importantly examine the health of the roster this week first and then try to assess how things could shake out in the game on Sunday. I will say this. I think when a team wins games and goes on a winning streak, I think it's harder for players when they're winning to keep their nose to the grindstone because you're feeling good. Yeah, you weren't perfect. And maybe the nature of the game being a close one will keep them squarely focused on the next game in front of them. It's hard not to think, though, that that Chiefs game looms large, especially if they win tonight and improve to 8-0. So, I don't know. You want to say keep your eyes on the next one only. I think when you're ripping off 3-4 wins in a row, and you know they've got 2 3-game winning streaks already, and now this one's at 4. Yeah, you would hope they learned their lesson from earlier in the season when they won 3 in a row and then got waxed for 2 straight weeks.
Yep.
Hopefully that's the lesson learned, and they don't go down that path again.
Chris Brown on the Wester Hotline. Thanks, Chris. We'll chat on Friday.
All right, have a good day, guys.
Chris Brown, his appearance brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women. I have not looked to see what the spread is in this game yet. Do you know?
For the Bills and the Colts?
Bills and Colts. I could check it.
I would guess it's going to be Bills minus 6.
6 or 7?
They're on the road, right? Like, you're not going to think it's going to be too drastic. Let's see. All right. Ooh, a little off. Bills minus 4.5.
Okay.
4.5 point
favorite.
The
Bills on that. Hey, before we let you go, be caller 5 to win a pair of tickets to the Shorzy Fall Classic at KeyBank Center Wednesday, November 13th. Courtesy of AEG Presents, visit Ticketmaster.com to get your tickets. Caller 5 to 716-2214-WGR. Pair of tickets to the Shorzy Fall Classic at KeyBank Center.
Fakes the handoff, rolls to his right, looking to pass, now gets hit as he throws, and it's caught in the end zone by Quinton Morris. His first catch of the season goes for a touchdown.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, hanging out with you here on the Extra Point Show. So get ready for Bills and Colts this Sunday at 1 p.m. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We go to the phones as David is on the line. David, how are we doing this morning?
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call. I want to talk about basically next week's game. Well, this week's game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really not looking forward to it. Only reason is because it doesn't seem like Flacco is in sync with the players that he has. He's had to jump from team to team to just get these players where they want them to be. And I think with bringing in these two defensive players that knows what our defense is, I think that's a big plus because of the fact we can be able to just put them right into the game. Our offense looks absolutely great right now. And going into this week, the only thing I think is, like everybody else has been stating, is containing the run on Jonathan Taylor. If we can contain that run on Jonathan Taylor, I don't see how this game cannot just be, I don't want to say a blowout, but a very hand-in game.
Yeah, David, I agree, man. Thanks for the call. I'll say blowout. That's fine. I'll do it. Because I think that's right. I think David's right on a lot of points. If you can stop Jonathan Taylor, it should be a pretty easy game. And on the Joe Flacco point, too, he has had one good game. He has started 4 for the Colts. It's been one good. He has 7 touchdowns to 2 picks. A lot of that is coming in one game. It was against Jacksonville. He went 33 for 44, 359 yards and 3 touchdowns.
And we all see what the Bills did for Jacksonville.
I was going to say, we should all see what Jacksonville is.
How does Doug Peterson still have a job?
I think partially that is just we're just going to wait to the end of the year. There's no reason to put an interim guy that we're not really going to give an honest look as a head coach. We're just, let's get through this year, get a high draft pick, and then we'll go get our next coach. We'll make a run at Ben Johnson or whatever.
I don't want to go too far off on that, but what would Ben Johnson do with Trevor Lawrence? Would it be anything?
I think the problem is with Trevor Lawrence now is it sort of seems like some of the bad habits are stuck in.
Right.
He is not making great throws. He'll have moments, though, where he does. It's just not consistent enough, and so I think the luster on him has worn off. He is truly the guy that, like, the new car drives off the lot, and then immediately the value depreciates. He's the guy that's like, well, I've owned the car for, like, 2 years, but it's a 2022, and it's like, well, yeah, but, like...
How many miles are on it, bud?
Yeah.
100,000?
And, like, you like to hit potholes.
Right.
So
yeah. You've driven across the country 3 times? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry. And so...
You go to London every year? Great.
Great.
Sorry. Back to the Colts.
On David's point, I know we misspoke, but I started laughing when he goes, I'm looking forward to next week's game. And I'm like, yep, same. So am I. And that's, I feel bad. Our producer here today, Trevor Howard, is a Colts fan.
He's got the Colts hat on and everything.
And I feel bad because, like, I'm telling him in the break, and I'm like, dude, it's not that I don't want to play your team. I don't care to watch this game. I'm ready to get to
the next one. He doesn't care to watch this game.
My only motivation is just loyalty. That's all I have with this team right now.
It's the best.
So, like, everyone's gonna clown on me. How are you a Colts fan in Buffalo? I'm just like, loyalty. Peyton Manning's my favorite player of all time.
That's fair.
Ugh,
Josh Allen's just like Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Join the dark
except
side.
Peyton Manning couldn't run.
That's very
Manning had no wheels.
He had a great run against the Bills for a touchdown.
That he did.
One time.
Who could forget?
It's fine. Peyton Manning with the handoff fake bootleg. Iconic. Iconic.
I mean, he has a statue right outside of Lucas Oil Stadium. Rightfully so.
He built it. I mean,
that's the house that Peyton built.
Yep.
That and the RCA Dome, but yeah.
That's fine.
That's fine.
But, oh, man, like, I guess the Colts are an uncomfortable team, too, because I really bought into all the hype for them this offseason, them and Houston.
I mean, it was fair because, I mean, Richardson and Stroud were both very electric, and well, Stroud in a much different way.
But Richardson in a small sample size,
right.
You were excited about. And you were interested.
And then it's like, oh, what if he doesn't get hurt? What happens then?
Mm-hmm.
But, again, what happens in the offseason is very important, especially after a rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, Richardson was hurt, so you got to wonder how that affects the offseason.
But then
for
you
him.
Saw what Shane Steichen was able to do in his first year there with Gardner Minshew. I think there was understandably some belief that, hey, like, they've got
some coach
here.
And it's a team that could win once they get their young guy.
Solid weapons, Michael Pittman Jr., Josh Downs, obviously we're seeing he's come along. But then they go out and draft A.D. Mitchell. And I guess there was this really belief that, like, they were going to take the next step you want to see, and instead it's been a clown show. I mean, again, like, we didn't even bring it up to Kevin yesterday, but hearing Jim Irsay's daughter is on the sidelines.
Yeah, that's weird.
With headphones on, and you're like, all right, I know Dallas is crazy, but come on. But then you remember Jim Irsay's the guy that tweets about all their transactions, and they don't actually have, like, a Colts PR page like the Bills have.
He's
their PR page. He's their PR page. So, like, it makes all the sense in the world, but you're just like...
Like, if she was an assistant coach, sure. But, like, if she doesn't have a title and she's just hanging out down there, that's kind of...
It's insane!
It's like you're having, like, just like the hawk watching over the mouse trying to make its next move.
Yeah, I don't...
Like, ready to just fire Shane Steichen. It's such a weird move.
I don't like anything about this game in a very different way from where, you know, Baltimore... I was nervous. I don't like my feelings on this game, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But I was nervous they were going to lose. I don't like this game for the sheer fact of I don't really want to watch this game. I'll probably like a lot of the highlights afterwards, but knowing the Chiefs are next, and then the bye, and then San Francisco, you've got the meat of the schedule coming up, and I'm like, that's what I want to see right there. That's what I'm paying money to watch, you know, kind of deal.
There's a tweet that I kind of – that somebody tweeted at you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can find it real quick here. It was from JT – yeah, right here. So from JT, not only should we beat Indy, but if Josh wants a real shot at MVP, this needs to be a highlight game. I like our chances against KC. Our defense should perform well. The point about this being a highlight real game, that's 100% true. If this is really that bad of a team and you think the Bills can go out there and do that and you think Allen deserves MVP, these are the types of games where MVP caliber players go out there and put up 40.
Yeah, they put up, you know, 4 touchdowns. He's out of the game by the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And granted, most of the second half talking points by the broadcast is, well, when you look ahead at their schedule, oh, who comes to Orchard Park next week? And that's what it becomes.
Right. But at the same time, though, you do have a lot of injuries to the wide receiver room.
That is a big thing because I mentioned it at the outset of the last segment, too, of just I'm a glass half empty kind of guy right now when it comes to the health of Keon Coleman. I think they are going to be sort of preparing him for either Kansas City next week or the bye week and get healthy. Sean McDermott has been sort of coy with how he phrases this when he's meeting with the media of, well, it's an ongoing situation. We don't know if it's going to be longer than this week, but he also isn't going to be ruled out for this week. And it's just, it's a bit much. It's a bit much for me.
Yeah.
And then Amari Cooper, I think, should be healthy. He was limited yesterday, but he was limited all week last week. And I assumed that last week was more of just precaution. He's not totally there. We're gonna slow play this a little bit. And also yesterday was a walkthrough. If he's still limited today, I think that might be a signal of he may not be playing this Sunday. But if it's him, Shakir, Kincaid, I feel really good about that passing attack against a not great Colts defense.
And you also have Cook.
And you also have Cook and Ray Davis.
They both have looked great. Ray Davis has popped off a few big catches, which that'd be interesting if that continues. I'd love to see that. If you have a pass-catching running back like Ray Davis that can just go out there and torch defenses.
I love what they have found in Davis and Cook.
Yeah.
I'm also now part of the group that wants Ray Davis to have more touches than
Ty Johnson.
No, than James Cook.
Oh.
I think I'm there with Ray Davis. He is more of the runner that I like watching, which is he just bounces off tackles.
Yeah, that's fair.
He makes the correct runs, what have you. And it feels like there's a big play with him 50% of the time he touches the ball.
What's his run, like average yards per rush?
I can grab that for you here.
Let's see. Compared to James Cook. I'll pull up James Cook. You pull up Ray Davis. We'll do it that way. So James Cook this year.
I have them both. James Cook's at 4.6. Ray Davis is at 4.3. With that being said, though, James Cook has had 109 rushing attempts to Ray Davis' 61.
Fair. That's a good point.
Now, you could argue, though, that if Ray is up there, all of a sudden he's dropping out of four and not that he's not going up. Because that was a big argument years ago with C.J. Spiller.
Yeah.
Where he has a great year, and then the moment they start giving him the rock a ton, his numbers dipped.
What is weird about that, though, is it feels like Ray Davis is going on longer runs. Like, it feels like every time he touches the ball, it's going to be a 7-yard run.
I think it's partially, too, because in his 10 receptions, he's averaging 14.9 yards per catch.
Whoa.
That also could be due to the 63-yard touchdown.
Right. And the 48-yard catch in the Jets game?
Mm-hmm.
42.
So I think that might be a big reason why is that he's had,
like, if you take those two out, then he's got 8 catches for how many yards?
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is. He had 1 catch against Tennessee, 6 yards. 1 catch against Houston for 4 yards. 1 catch against Jacksonville for 1 yard. 1 catch against Miami that ultimately went for -1. And then 1 catch against Arizona that went for 14. It's those two plays.
Yeah.
It's those two plays. And that's what's building it up of, like, he's been awesome, is he has a 42-yard catch and a 63-yard catch.
Done.
That's fair.
That stinks.
Nope, still there. I'm staying to it. I've loved what I've seen from him.
Like, he's still a very good player, and he looks really good. And I do like him, but I think that James Cook, I think what they're at right now in terms of the split is good. I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of like a 60-40 split at this point.
He has been the better runner, though, over these last 4 games. Against Houston, James Cook, 20 rushes, 82 yards, good for 4.1 average. And then for Ray Davis against Houston, did he not play
against
Houston?
Yeah. No rushes against Houston.
Yeah, no rushes against Houston. But then against New York, he goes 20 for 97, good for almost 5 yards per carry. Against Tennessee, 5 for 41, 8.2 yards per carry. Then for Cook, 12 for 32. That's a big thing. I mean, that's below 3 yards per carry.
Right. I think that's why it feels like he's running 7 yards per carry, because the past 4 games, like, it's kind of recency bias, right? Like, it's the past 4 games that I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, he really wasn't anything in the first 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the past 4 games they've been leaning on him more. So it's like, that's just kind of...
It does feel like he's getting more touches. I don't necessarily know if that's true, but it does feel like he has now kind of become more of a focal point since the Jets game.
I mean, since the Jets game, he's had 35 rushing attempts.
And before that, yeah.
He had... He had just over 20.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're using him more. Again, I overall, though, they have a good rushing attack.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the thing, too, is it's nice that you have that two-headed monster, essentially. And you can even throw Ty Johnson in there every once in a while, like a third down, a third and short kind of situation.
Or a big pass play, because why not?
Yeah, right. And that's where it's...
Doesn't he have two of them?
He does. Oh my goodness. I think. but that's where it's nice, because I feel like the absence of a guy like Keon Coleman and the potential absence, well, potential absence for both, because Coleman's not ruled out yet, but the potential absence of Coleman and Cooper, if you just throw the ball to Ray Davis or throw the ball to James Cook or even Ty Johnson, like, those guys can get you as much yardages as Mac Hollins. They can get you more yardage than Curtis Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot to be desired there, and I think that's going to be a big piece this week if one of or both of Cooper and Coleman are out.
I'd be very surprised if both of them were out. I would be very surprised. That would be the only time where I'd be nervous, because then you go back to Mac Hollins is one of your is your leading outside wide receiver. You've gotten zero from Curtis Samuel. I literally at this point cannot expect anything.
But honestly, though,
Shakir and I love Shakir, but he is best in the inside role.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have no one on the outside to drag any coverage away from him. That would be my only fear, is if both of them are out, now all of a sudden, just purely based off of, you know, who you have left,
it
becomes a close game.
But the way we've been talking about this game, though, even if Coleman and Cooper are out, how much does that move the needle?
I think in terms of if you're...
Because the Colts offense still would probably be missing Michael Pittman. And it's still going to have Joe Flacco as quarterback.
Sure. I think for me, it's not going to end up moving, I think, the betting line.
No.
It'll probably stay 4 to 4.5. It might move down to 4, sure. In terms of how I feel about it, though, it will change. Now, all of a sudden, it will be a game I'm going to try to watch the entire thing or keep up on it aggressively, because it's now all of a sudden, I mean, you don't have any of your outside weapons. And yeah. It's due to wrist injuries out of nowhere that's like infecting the team.
Well, and also, too, if you look at the amount of rushing yards per attempt that the Colts have given up so far this year, it's about 4.4.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what your running backs are averaging.
Yeah.
About 4.5 rushing yards per attempt. And I'm not saying you have to rely on your running game, but if Cooper and Coleman are out, you could lean more into it than you normally do.
I
think you'd still be successful. I don't want it, and it wouldn't be like a blowout game, but I think it would still be a successful game. I think you'd still win.
Yeah, they just, that passing game, when they don't have the outside weapons they need, it goes away quick. And when you become so run dependent or pass dependent, it has caused problems this year for a number of teams, not just the Bills. But we've seen when they don't have their outside weapons, 9 for 30 against Houston, and they're not particularly dangerous this year, even with them being 6-3. 803-0550 is the number to call. Vibe check for this week's Colts game. We both feel pretty good about it up to this point. I think only there was just more certain injuries, certain, you know, inactives could maybe sway our opinions. I do want to give a thought when we come back after a quick timeout on tonight's game, Bengals and Ravens. You're listening to WGR.
Extremely humbled and grateful. And man, you're just trying to get one when you become a head coach. I remember that Jets game, our first year in 2017, just praying that we could get that first win, that first game. And still have a picture of celebration afterwards on the field there. And I'll never forget it.
Sean McDermott, what is it, 80 wins after yesterday?
Yeah.
55-20 in their last 75 games, the Bills. Not to be ignored. Yes, the playoffs are the hurdle they haven't cleared, but can't clear it today. Only do what you're doing. Get yourself into a better position. And continue to, I was going to say a very bad word right here, mess with Miami. Which will go into next year now, having not figured out what to do about the Bills. That's done for this year, unless it's the playoffs, which is not impossible.
No, it's not impossible. And you've lost to this team twice. I mean, whatever. The division's out of the question, I think, for them with the two losses. But, you know, you still are, you know, the Chargers, it's not the reverse AFC power ranking day. Don't get confused. Chargers, Broncos, Colts, Bengals are like the two teams that are in, and then the two teams that are just on the outside. And then it's the Jets. And like that, you look at the Jets and go 3-6. And if you watch them play, you're the guy that's just not going to happen. Look at the standings and go, they win a couple in a row, you know, they could be the Broncos. I mean, it could flip that fast.
803-0550 for your calls. Here's Greg with us. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Show Bulldog. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, how many more drops does Cook have to make? And with a game on the line, perhaps, where they have more faith in this great running back they picked up in the fourth round.
I mean, second round.
Davis.
Oh, you mean Davis. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. Davis in the fourth round. Amazing. And every time he goes in there, he's just that spark. And I was so disgusted with Brady went back to the running on the first two plays, and then third down, we throw it, and we're off the field. It's so discouraging and motivating. Discouraging for us, motivating for the Dolphins. I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this Cook's last year on his contract?
No, it's his third year, and he's a second-round pick, so he's got next year, and then they'll have to make a decision, which, you know, I hope isn't to give him a lucrative second contract, because I don't want to do that with almost any running back ever. Ray Davis is a big part of the reason why. You know, like, just assembly line these guys in and use them up and never overpay them. So we'll see how that goes. I don't think Cook's drop was at a game-costing point in the game, but it could have been a big play. And, you know, it's something that has been a problem for him since he emerged as their featured running back, last year really being it. This year it has not been as much of a thing, but, you know, yesterday was clearly one. I mean, he just did not see that ball into his hands.
He's not dominating the backfield, though. I mean, Davis is playing enough to, I think, I'm not sort of thinking about that Cook needs to play less. And I'm not a very big Cook fan. And I like Davis just fine. Yards per carry is about the same. Cooks is better. I think it's easy to like the backup. We used to have this with quarterbacks all the time. You know, most popular player on the team. And with it's the drops that sort of crack the door open for, like, the calls for the next guy.
I think the bigger question about the running back usage yesterday specifically is not, I mean, Cook is at 55%. Like, I'm all right with that. I mean, he's earned that. He was excellent for this team last year and has been productive for them this year. The thing that I didn't expect to continue after it looked like Davis had really broken out in the Jet game a few weeks ago is that Ty Johnson would be still out snapping him. Ty Johnson had 10 more snaps than Davis had in this game yesterday, 19-9. And I don't know, and I like Johnson too. I mean, they got a nice mix there, but I feel like Davis is the better second guy at this point. But they, you know, at least situationally yesterday, I mean, I don't know what all goes into that. If how much is that, you know, different formations that they like Johnson's skill set versus Davis's skill set, that kind of stuff, game script, but to see Johnson out-snapping Davis is still a little odd to me.
And Cook, to this point, he has not been on the field for as much as 60% of snaps since week one. 61% in week one is as high for the year. So maybe it seems like that's higher. Maybe it seems like Cook is on the field much more often than about half the snaps. 55% yesterday, 55% in Seattle, 53% against Tennessee. I mean, that's not much more than half. So, I don't know. I would say that the caller brought up something that I mentioned yesterday, whether there was something strategic about how the game started. I mean, of course, you want to get first downs and points. But the Bills have had the first quarter has been easily their worst quarter this year. And I think a lot of times teams are sort of probing what are you going to do if I do this? And what if I use this guy? And what if we send this guy in motion? They want to find out, trying to get information, not at the expense of success, ideally.
Right.
But you want to see what Miami is going to do to whatever looks you want to. You're setting them up for something. And could the Bills be a little bit going overboard with that? I mean, I wouldn't know. But I also was sort of annoyed yesterday Oh, okay. So much success, just bing, 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 quick passes right out of the box. And instead of yesterday, just like two inside runs, incomplete punt. I mean, that's knowing that the pass didn't hit or that the runs didn't pop or anything. I know that now because it already happened.
Right.
Still, though, that's not my favorite. Because it just seems predictable, and like you really, the gaining yards is the second priority.
Right. Behind. But the game, in their defense, in this scenario, the game down there in week two, they ran it all over them. Like that was the thing that they did in that game. That was Cook's, you know, big game. So
here's Eric next. Hi, Eric.
Hi, guys.
Hi. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, okay. Sorry, man. I didn't sound like you, Mike. Look, McDermott, I mean, people love him or hate him. All 80 wins in 8 years. He's the best ever. He's the best. And he's very good, undeniably. And then there's other people that say, okay, he stinks. He's horrible. We'll never win a Super Bowl with him. I think he's two-thirds a good coach. And what I mean is culture, he has definitely improved that in the building. Our organization is one of the top two or three in the league. Player development, undeniable. He makes players better. He's a good coach in that. But game management, he's horrible. That challenge was atrocious. My eardrum still bleeds from Bulldogs' rant after the Philly game last year. I mean, is there any way that a coach would give some of that up because he's great at what he's great at, but he's not at what he's not?
I think that is a lot of that is given up. I think these challenges, I mean, he's got the red flag, but I think most of these situations, they're telling him from upstairs whether to challenge the play or not. I can defend yesterday's. We just had Garrett Wilson on Thursday night get an incomplete pass reversed to a touchdown because they decided that his shin made it to the ground before his knee landed out of bounds. And we're just going to decide how long we think his shin is because there wasn't a tip of the shin. I mean, so that's the Tua play. He's diving for the first down. His shin lands close to the line. It's fourth down. And that's huge. It's early in the fourth quarter, and you know you could need that timeout later. But I don't think it was the worst of these challenges from him. Didn't work. Looked pretty obvious if you ignore the shin, which I'd like to be able to do, but I am so addle-minded about this sport now that I can't ignore the shin.
I didn't ignore the shin, and I hated it. I didn't think it was even close. I didn't like much of what Trent Green had to say yesterday. Really, I just think there was not any real value added with him telling you anything about the game. But he did say about that challenge, they're going to move the ball up. Like if anything's going to happen here, it's going to they were too lenient. They weren't as, you know, they didn't give Tua enough credit. And that's exactly how I saw it. I just didn't think it was close. Of course, I was paying attention to the shin on the heels of this Wilson play from the other night. I just didn't think there was any chance that was going to be overturned.
You know what else he got right? Mostert and Taylor Rapp on the helmet hit. Trent Green.
Yeah.
Because that flag, he said, they're going to call that on Mostert for lowering his helmet. And I thought, having not seen the replay, I thought to myself, I've never seen that called on an offensive player. That's another one that when the NFL made that rule, I'm like, oh, sure. Josh Allen lowers his head to get a first down. They're going to call 15 yards on Josh Allen. No, they're not. And that was right. They never throw that flag, even though the helmet's lowered. It's only on defensive guys. And that one was a horrendous call on Rapp. I mean, Rapp totally takes the brunt of Mostert's
helmet.
I'm
glad you were there to say that about Green, because that's right. He was right on that. And I probably exaggerated to make the point.
I mean, the guy's never seen a kick he didn't like.
No, that's for
but,
sure.
that one, I think he had the right instinct there. Like, that can't be on the defense.
Yeah.
And that's what the replay showed, too.
He also, now that you mention it, I was really hard on him for no good reason. I thought he was pretty fair about the holding calls, too. The two holding calls, I think he didn't rip the officials, but it was very much to me sounded like what an announcer sounds like when he's thinking, I can't be too obvious about this, but I don't know if there's a lot there. That's usually the furthest they'll go, and I think he went there on both of those. Just like, that looked like a technique.
When the Bills got to like 3rd and 30.
Yeah, right.
Allen's touchdown called
Allen's
back.
Allen's touchdown called back, and there was a the play before that was also called back. So the Allen touchdown was on 2nd and 20. No, nope.
Yeah, well, they kept it close.
Yeah.
Sal Capaccio coming up in less than 20 minutes. We'll look for your calls again after a break. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, Football Monday, WGR.
C It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. Happy Friday, TGIF. Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way.
TGIFF.
It's Football Friday.
Yeah.
You know what they say, Joe? You can't listen all day unless you start early in the morning. So if you're with us, welcome. Yeah. Gotta start early if you want to listen all day. Sal Capaccio joins us on the Western Hotline. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning. Starts with one step. That's all it's got to take.
That's
then
right.
Then you go from there.
Were you playing against or did you have Ja'Marr Chase in lineups? I feel like we have to be kind to people today that are waking up and seeing that Ja'Marr Chase destroyed their fantasy week.
Neither, thankfully. I checked afterwards and I saw, oh, that dude had 55 points. He had Ja'Marr Chase. And then the guy he played had 53 because he had Lamar and Mark Andrews. I'm like, whoa. Yeah. So already we got a barn burner going on, but I got a couple different leagues, and I did not have Ja'Marr in either. I had Derrick Henry in one and went against Derrick Henry in the other. So he didn't have a great day at like 18 points. So
yeah,
I'm kind of happy about one, but not happy about the other. That's the way it goes in fantasy football.
Yeah, you got Henry there on the touchdown after Lamar. Mm-hmm. That might have been, of all the incredible plays in that game, we just watched it again up here, like that might have been the most incredible one for me, just how Lamar is able to toe-tap the sideline patiently all the way up to the one. But he got to the one, so if you're a Henry owner, you got the touchdown. But there were a lot of big plays last night.
I woke up this morning even thinking, boy, if I'm a Bengals fan, how excruciating was last night? I mean, all of the different ways that they found to lose. You think about not tackling Lamar, not tackling Wallace. Oh my
right.
gosh,
that one, how that do you one let worse. Him
yeah. how do you let him go down the sidelines? The missed penalties on the officials at the end of the game, the fumble that caused the turnaround. I mean, we've been down this road before. We've been down this road on Monday nights, on night games. This was a Thursday night, right? Where I thought this morning already waking up, boy, looking back at that game, if you're a Bengals fan, how excruciating a loss is that for you last night?
Yeah. What's your takeaway from a Bills fan standpoint? Like what Bills fans watching that, what do you think they come out of with that game?
It's funny. I actually did a poll yesterday. I want to see, did I have the, let's see if the results are here. I actually asked on Twitter yesterday, what is the preferred outcome for Bills fans for this game? I want to see. And there was a good debate going on. And most people, a lot of Bills fans said, how could you possibly want Cincinnati to win? How do you want them? You can't want them in the playoffs. But actually, Bengals' preferred outcome was Bengals 75-25%.
Yeah.
And I get it. I think the Bengals, to me, would be the preferred outcome because, look, I mean, if Baltimore had lost, you're now suddenly looking at them kind of in this bit of a schmozzle with some other teams. Now, I'm not saying they wouldn't make it, but considering some of their harder games they have left, it wouldn't be a guarantee that they're a slam dunk to make the playoffs. I think they'd still probably be right there and make it, but I get it. For Cincinnati to give them another loss, I mean, obviously, you know, they're such a talented team. You don't want to face them in the playoffs, and now that they have another loss, that hurts their chances a lot. But honestly, guys, there just doesn't look like there's many teams. I'll give you one. Yeah, I saw a Jets, you know, Boy Green. We've had Boy Green on, right? He does talk in Syracuse. You had him on a few weeks ago. He's a Jets fan. And he actually tweeted last night, and I said, oh, my God, that's right. He said something like, if the Bills beat the Colts and the Jets win, the Jets are in the 8th seed. That's how bad the AFC is right now, guys.
That's
where all these teams are sitting.
Right. Right now, season ended today, would be Denver. Like, Denver, Indy.
Yes.
That's why yesterday, like, to me, it was a good debate, and why I actually even ended up like, okay, I think I might rather have Baltimore here. So, like, Cincinnati and how much dangerous, I think more dangerous they are than those other teams we just mentioned. They have losses this year to Kansas City by one and Baltimore by one and by three. Like, they are, we saw them last night, they are capable of going toe-to-toe with anybody in the league. I would think the Bills as well. I don't know how complete they are. I mean, as you've seen in two Raven games so far, it's mostly just Burrow and Chase, right? Like, their whole team almost right now seems to be just Burrow and Chase is the whole thing keeping it afloat.
Yeah, and listen, last night, I mean, I thought, oh my God, how are the Bengals, how is this Bengals defense doing what they're doing to the Ravens offense? And then obviously everything turned, right? Because the Bengals defense has not been very good this year. And then last night, they suddenly turned it on, and now here comes the Bengals defense under Lou Amarillo and Arumo that we've seen over the last few years. But again, last night, at the end of the day, it wasn't good enough. You look at the Bengals defense this year, I mean, they've given up, let's see, 35, 24, 37, 41, 38.
Yeah,
I just they have to kind of win with those shootout games. And then next week they go to the Chargers, the Bengals. And that's suddenly becoming, the Chargers are live, right? I mean, the Chargers are an interesting team in all this mess too, because they actually have a doable schedule outside of a few games here, and they have the number one defense in the league as far as points allowed.
So Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline here on a Football Friday. All right, so let's dig into the Bills and the Colts. And in this matchup, you know, I don't know if anyone's going to call it a trap game. The injuries will have people maybe a little bit nervous because the Bills are dealing with some. So let's get to the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Is there good news? Good news, bad news? It seems like, you know, there's cause for concern.
Yeah, for sure. Keon Coleman has not practiced for two straight days, and it just doesn't appear after what Sean McDermott said about how it could be something that lingers over a week, even though he wasn't going to officially rule him out earlier in the week. It's really trending towards him not playing on Sunday. And obviously, you know, you can deal with bringing some guys in and out, but now you're dealing with him and Amari Cooper, possibly, who Amari Cooper had a pretty good... It looked like a cast on his hand that he's dealing with there. And that could be, and obviously he's practicing, but he's not catching passes from when we're out there from Josh Allen in the media portion of the practice. And then he's listed as limited. So you wonder where he is. It's nice that he's limited again this week after being limited last week, even though he didn't play. But he was limited last week and he didn't play. So what are you looking at now with Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman if they're both down? And then you get Mac Hollins, who was wearing a red non-contact jersey. He was full in the estimated report on Wednesday. Then he goes to limited on Thursday, and you're like, oh my gosh, did something happen? You hope not. Now, I would also say it could also be that they're laying off him a little bit because they have injuries at other guys at the same position. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're not doing anything to get him, you know, any sort of more injured, I guess. And then Curtis Samuel's also dealing with an injury. This wide receiver group is very banged up. The good news and optimistic news is they haven't made a roster move this week. They did yesterday by releasing Zion Logue, but there's no wide receiver roster move that they've made. So if you want to read into that, it doesn't feel like they're doing something to have to kind of panic on it, right?
Yeah.
You do have four players on the practice squad you can elevate. So let's see where it goes today. Sean McDermott joins the Extra Point Show at 10:45 to let us know a little bit more.
One thing about the wide receivers in the practice squad room, so Joe and I talked about this, is there a different hierarchy of guys you would call up if you planned on throwing to one of them? I mean, Jalen Virgil's been up a couple games, and it's not like they're going to throw to him. If they think there is a target vacuum, is that more of a Shavers spot possibly? He was up for the Houston game, is that right? So I just wonder how you look at that. I mean, Deion Kane and Ham, like, just it's a bit of a schmozzle there. There's names, and I just wonder if there's a different set of call-up rules effectively within the team.
It's always been a mystery to me, because whenever I think that they have a guy that might replace another guy because of his body type, because of his style, not necessarily. And it's also interesting, here's what they've done. I actually tweeted out yesterday, people can see, I went through all the elevations they've had this year. Who's been elevated how many times? Each player gets three around the roster. They've elevated Jalen Virgil twice and Tyrell Shavers once. That's it. So now they still have two left for Tyrell Shavers. They still have one left for Jalen Virgil. You still haven't elevated Deion Kane at all or KJ Hamler at all. To answer your question, Jeremy, I think it's just about game plan. And, you know, the organization likes to kind of reward these guys with, hey, you want to play? You want to be up? Show us what you got this week. Do your job. Show us that you're dialed in and you're making plays in practice. And, you know, they go from there. So I wouldn't doubt that there's something along those lines with it. Jalen Virgil's interesting. He's been up a couple weeks, hardly plays, but he gets in right away. I think he was in the second play of the game 2 weeks in a row. And then he goes in motion. And you wonder, is that something they're setting up for later? How he's been up now 2 weeks in a row. Do they like what they see? So you bring him up. I don't think it comes down to necessarily targets and volume. It might come down to game plan and what we think fits against this particular team and maybe a play or two that they have in the playbook designed for that player as the game goes on if it gets to that point.
I wonder how impactful this is too to like their screen game, Sal, because those Shakir screens work so well. And when you just watch the plays, and like when we watch the plays, your eyes go to Shakir and what's happening with the ball. But those screens work. There was a play last night where a Zay Flowers screen got blown up for like minus 6 yards because Rashad Bateman just completely whiffed on a block.
Yep.
And that Hollins comes to mind as someone who's very good at that. But Coleman, too. And Cooper is a bigger body that we saw a couple times in this area. So I wonder if that thought process comes into it, too. Like, their screens are working, and who's going to give them their best opportunity to get Shakir into open space, if you will.
Yeah, and I think the bigger picture is, you're right, Joe, that play specifically, but just blocking, it's becoming a big part. It's a big part of what the Bills do at wide receiver. We know that, and we can, you know, kind of snicker at it a little bit and like, blocking, wide receiver, come on, throw to these guys. That's right, but look at the style of offense they're playing. It's a big part of what they do. It's a big reason why Josh Allen only has 2 interceptions. The depth of target isn't that far down the field. Blocking's a big piece of it. We've seen blocking really help in the screen game, as you said, but also in the run game. And this is a team, the Colts, that is not a really great run defense statistically. Depends on what analytics and metrics you want to look at. They've had some big games against them running the football. So let's take everything into account we just said, guys, which is all these wide receiver injuries and not making roster moves. This could just be a game where... You know, the Bills are, okay, we're going to go and run it 35 times with James Cook and Ray Davis, and we're going to win the game that way, and we'll get on it next week. Like, I would not be surprised if that's the case.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline ahead of Bills-Colts. New defensive tackles, you know, how active we expect them to be, how quickly they'll be incorporated. Jordan Phillips, Quentin Jefferson both join this team that is looking for, I don't know, Sal, like, there are conflicting numbers on their run defense and whether or not they're good or bad against the run. Taron Johnson did say in postgame last week that they invite teams to run. So
yes,
it's always a little bit of a cat and mouse, or however you want to say it here, but what do you expect from the two signings that they've made to the defensive tackles, Jefferson, Phillips, and they still have an open roster spot as well?
They do. I'll get to that in a minute. I think we really should talk about that because it's really interesting. I mean, guys, I think that Phillips and Jefferson are both in play for this week. I absolutely could see them playing this week. They're down to 5 defensive tackles because of the release of Zion Logue, which we'll talk about in a second. But they have 5 active defensive tackles. They have 2 on the practice squad, Ilianku and Branson Dean. Ilianku was very good last week, by the way, against the Miami Dolphins. Like, I mean, he made a couple of nice plays that I don't know if other defensive tackles make. And in the run game, yeah, the Bills got run on a little bit, but he actually was a guy that helped out in that regard. So they have options here at defensive tackle, and they're going against Jonathan Taylor. We know what happened a few years ago when Jonathan Taylor played against a Sean McDermott defense and the Buffalo Bills defense. I don't think that that has to have anything to do with this week. It does not at all. But it does show that, you know, he's a really good running back, and this style of defense, you know, you better be better this time around at tackling him. If you talk to people in Indianapolis and you read them, they're all saying, why are you not giving the ball to Jonathan Taylor? He had 13 carries last week, but he's averaging 4.8 yards a carry. So you wonder there as well, you know, how much that plays into it, like what they want to do game plan wise. I'm guessing 5 defensive tackles could be up. Why not? I mean, you're going with a rotation here, and you have to stop a team that's going to probably want to run the ball against you. So Oliver, Jones, Johnson, and I think Phillips and Jefferson both have a true chance to be, you know, players this week on the roster. The other reason could be, too, because if you have to elevate a receiver, now you have 5 active defensive tackles. You don't have to elevate one, right? You sign 2 to the active roster. So now they're all there. You don't have to elevate somebody. You can elevate from another position now, you know, because now it becomes a numbers game and a roster game. As far as the open roster spot. So yeah, yesterday, very interesting move. They released defensive tackle Zion Logue. Now I will say it could be very simple here, guys. It could be, listen, we don't need 6 defensive tackles on the active roster. This guy, we got him from the practice squad. It was nice to have him on the team as a rotational piece, but we're going to let him go and kind of find another spot. And maybe we even bring him back to the practice squad. It could be that simple, right? But the fact is, you don't have to do that. You can have 53 guys, and they released him. I have a lot of people wondering, does that mean they're bringing in player A, B, or C? Who are A, B, and C? First of all, let's take them one at a time. It's not for Matt Milano, for anybody. Matt Milano is going to have his practice window open first. That hasn't even happened, and they don't need to put him on the 53-man roster to do that. So that's out of the question. They didn't release a player yesterday to make room for Matt Milano. Number two, could it be for Micah Hyde? Sure, I guess, in the long term, but I don't think you're releasing a player on Wednesday of a game day week and then bringing Micah Hyde, who hasn't played all year and was, you know, not saying sitting on his couch eating potato chips. I'm sure he's in good shape, but you're not bringing him in on the active roster on a Thursday or Friday of a game week. It just would be weird. But maybe, I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility he joins this team. I'm not predicting it one way or the other, but sure, that could happen. And but I don't see how this particular move at this time would do that. And then last one was the Ravens had released Yannick Ngakoue yesterday, and then the Bills had released, or the day before, maybe it was. Either way, he had to go through waivers.
Yeah, it was.
They
purposely waived Ngakoue yesterday and not before the deadline, because I read if they did it before the deadline, he would have been free to sign with any other team.
Correct.
Versus yesterday, he has to go through waivers, and if he clears, they want him back on the practice squad.
That's exactly right. So that's how it works, Joe. As you know, and in case people don't, if you've been in the league 4 years and you get released, you're a free agent. But once the trade deadline passes, everyone is subject to waivers once they get released. It doesn't matter if you've been in the league 20 years. You know, it doesn't matter. You have to. So that's exactly why they did that. So could that be it? I don't know. It's an interesting move for me to get down to 52. It really could be that simple as, look, we're not going to – we have numbers here. We're practicing. We don't need – at the time it would be, what, 9 defensive tackles counting the practice squad, taking reps away from each other. So let's just move on here and keep our options open as we go forward.
But how does – do you know how that works transactionally? Like, if you are a team that wants to – someone gets put on waivers and you decide, okay, we want to put a claim in on him. Do you have to have that roster spot available when you claim him, or can you do that and then after the fact say, okay, well, now we're going to release someone because we got him?
You can release after you are awarded him.
Okay.
Because here's the reason, Joe. Like, if 10 teams put a claim in, you don't expect 10 teams to have to make roster moves just to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Only the team that gets awarded the player then has to make a roster move. They get a little bit of a, okay, you're getting him awarded. Before we put him on your roster, who are you releasing to do that? So that's how that would work. And that's a great point you just made, which is, okay, then if that's the case, why release a guy before being awarded another player, right?
Right, you wouldn't have to, right.
Right, exactly. So, I don't want to read too much into it other than it probably maybe just was, hey, thanks a lot, and we're going to give you a chance because you're going to be buried here in our rotation, and, you know, if you can clear waivers, we'd like to have you maybe back in the practice squad or whatever, you know, and he gets a chance to go elsewhere.
Is that still a position you think they're looking for more? Or maybe if that could even be internal. But as you've pointed out, like, Greg Rousseau and A.J. Epenesa are playing more snaps than really any defensive end has under Sean McDermott, and that's been by circumstance, and they are, you know, hopefully going to get healthy by the end of the year with Smoot. Is it worth noting at all, or is it interesting at all to you that Rousseau and Epenesa, their workload is higher than normal guys at that position?
It's interesting, but I also think that you're looking at Von Miller, who is older. He obviously had the suspension. I wonder how that looks going forward. I imagine they're going to have some load management as you go on the season here with Von Miller. I know that the load management's already come with the 4 games he was out, but he is still at his age. You want him, and look where you are in your standings. You know, you want Von Miller ready to go in the playoffs and being the closer, right? So I think that's part of it. You know, Javon Solomon, I think you like some flashes from him here or there, Joe, but it's not a guy that you want to rely on consistently to be out there. So I don't know. I would say I don't think it's necessarily a position you're looking to add to, but I think you have to kind of massage how you have the rotation going forward.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline ahead of Bills Colts. So Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show today, 10:00. Schedule for that?
Yeah, we're gonna have Sean McDermott at 10:45 a.m. today.
All right.
So he'll have our first injury update, our injury update for Friday. If he declares anybody out at that time, we'll see. We'll also get an update on who's, you know, going to be at practice today doing anything. On Keon Coleman, real quick, though, guys, it is noteworthy. And, you know, I wrote about this in a video. He didn't have anything on his wrist. No wrap, no brace. I mean, that's super encouraging, right? So hopefully, even if it's going to be out this week, you hope that, okay, avoided like super disaster here with him, because that was interesting to me that he had nothing on there, but he didn't really do any work. He was off to the side working with trainers. And for the Colts, by the way, Michael Pittman Jr., he has not practiced 2 days in a row. He's got a back injury and a finger injury. He's the only player on their active roster who has not practiced yet this week, so they might be without their wide receiver. Brian Colzio is going to join me at 11. Paul's going to be flying back from New York, so unfortunately he can't join me. But we got to talk Sabres, right? Really nice win last night. So I asked Brian, and he's nice enough to take a little time out of his day. He's going to join me at 11. And then I know the Bills are playing in a dome this weekend, but Pat Hammer at 11:30, because, hey, Indy's a great city. I know I've talked to people that are going there to visit, and we want to know what the weather's going to be like for people going to Indy this weekend if you're going to be watching the Bills. I think the dome will be closed, guys, because it's supposed to rain on Sunday, but I have not had official word on that.
I was going to say, isn't it?
Does that one open?
I didn't realize it opened. Or they open
it. Yeah, you can do that. Yep. I know, because they never do it, right? I'm sorry, now I'm drawing a blank on the darn name of it. Lucas Oil.
Lucas Oil.
Right? Lucas Oil Stadium. Hold on. Let me just make sure. I know, right? It is a multi-purpose stadium, blah blah blah. And yeah, because when I read, there are definitely, it's been open before. Yes. In fact, I know for sure, because Pat McAfee was talking with Josh yesterday about the dome being open or closed. Isn't that funny? We never think about this one being open at all.
I've never thought about that one being able, maybe it's the shape of it.
I thought it was like a field house.
It looks like a barn.
Yeah,
the stadium features a retractable roof and a large retractable window on one end, allowing the Colts to play both indoors and outdoors.
Yeah. I didn't know that there's not rules on this, by the way. Did you guys see what happened in Arizona last week on Sunday? How they had the roof.
They had to close it when it started raining?
Yeah, it started pouring. And like, it was only on the field because they had the stadium open, because probably thinking, when's it going to rain in Phoenix? It starts pouring while the Bears are on offense. So the Cardinals start closing the roof, but it takes 10 minutes to close the roof. So the Bears had to play a drive in the pouring rain on offense, and by the time the Cardinals were on offense, then the roof was closed, and they were dry.
That's funny. It takes a while to close those things, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's why, it took a while.
Thanks, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Be listening with Sal at 10 o'clock and Sean McDermott at 10:45. Time for a break. We'll be back in a snap, brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. Jeremy and Joe on a football Friday. Give us a ring, 803-0550. It's almost time to remember some Colts. I'm really happy with the guy. I don't think
I'm going to beat the guy you got.
I already told him, tip of my tongue. It's really happy about this one. Great player. We'll remember some Colts along the way. Fun franchise to do it with. Jeremy and Joe on Football Friday.
All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. Pleased to be joined in studio by Bills running back James Cook. Player interview appearances on One Bills Live presented by Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills. All right, James, fresh off the practice field. Thanks for giving us some time. Appreciate it.
No problem.
I'm going to start right there. You are often called, James, a man of few words. Is there any other player in the Bills locker room that you think talks less than you do?
I say Coop.
Coop? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh, yeah, since he's got here, he's kind of quiet as kept all the time, right?
Yeah.
I was going to say Benford.
Or that too, yeah.
He, right?
Yeah. Or Lewis Cien. He don't really talk.
Oh, Lewis Cien doesn't talk much.
Yeah.
Even though he's a former college teammate. Okay. Well, actually, did he finish up before you got to Georgia?
We finished the same time.
Same time. Okay.
All right.
We've been asking our listeners here at the midseason mark today, how would you describe the Bills' identity as a team? Like, since you're on offense, we'll ask you only about the offense. How would you describe the offense's identity this season?
Just playing together, you know. No one is bigger than each other. You know, we all play together. So, I mean, that's what's taking us over the edge this year. Like, nobody got an ego, and we sticking together. So, as long as we keep doing that, we're going to be good.
Yeah, they came in with the mantra of everybody eats, and certainly he started out. Josh was, he was targeting everybody. I mean, I'm surprised McDermott didn't have a reception in the game, right? I mean, now the season's getting rolling. You got some guys out of it. You're getting a lot more touches. You've got Shakir, who's catching everything they throw at him. And guys just elevate. How is that, What does Joe Brady tell you guys about that? And, you know, I know he doesn't really talk about target share or anything like that, but that you guys got to be cool with that when you're in the having a hot hand, you know, give the guy more touches, right?
I mean, yeah, just everybody eat mentality. You know, that's what we've been sticking to in our room, offensive room, you know. That's what we've been doing. And, I mean, it's been coming to life and been eating.
Yeah.
How much do your teammates kind of rib you a little bit because of your quiet nature? Like, you're all about business, going to work, putting the work in, all that stuff. But I have been told by people that you got a pretty good sense of humor. You're like a pretty funny guy. That might shock some people that don't know you personally. But how do you get ribbed for being as quiet as you are?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I joke with my guys, you know, the guys that I'm comfortable around and the ones who I grind with every day. So, I mean, they're going to see it every day. So
yeah.
That's why.
If you're a guy that likes to do the bit, and you come out and you can tell. I mean, you're serious. You kind of you apply yourself and that. How is it hard to play with a goober like Josh? Like a guy, he never takes anything serious.
I mean, he's like really a 12-year-old,
right?
Not really hard. I mean, Josh gonna be Josh. You gotta just go with the flow with him.
Because I mean, he came up with the Jimbo nickname for you. Yeah. I don't know how you feel about that. And we could talk about nicknames in a minute here. But you know, you come in here as a rookie, and all of a sudden he's just throwing Jimbo at you. I mean, has anybody else called you that before, or was how off guard were you caught by that? Like, oh man, I hope this doesn't stick. Or what were you thinking?
I mean, not caught off guard because I kind of heard it before. But I mean, of course, once he said it, then everybody hear it.
In a press conference. Yeah, that's when it's over.
Yeah.
It's like, Josh, come on.
I got to ask you a little bit about the college game. What do you think of the new college playoff format? It's a lot different since you left.
Yeah, I mean, 12 teams, you know, the best teams in the playoffs, you know. So we'll see how that goes, and hopefully Georgia are in it.
Yeah, like top four get a bye, so that's a big advantage, and then they play at home in the next round. So, like, you want to be in that top four.
Right.
And they're looking good for that, so that's a plus.
Yeah.
At Ole Miss this week.
I mean, you must talk to your former teammate. What do they think about all this? And because Georgia's going to be in it no matter what, right? I mean.
Yeah, I mean, guys just keep working, you know. They got Kirby over there, you know. I'm sure he is stirring that in their head, keep going 1-0 every week. So, I mean, pretty sure they're going to do that.
Right.
I mean, you've heard dozens and dozens of pregame speeches over your football life, I'm sure. Kirby is known for having some special ones. Pregame, halftime. What does anybody come close to him in terms of the material he comes up with and keeping it fresh?
Nah. I mean, no one come close to him. He's going to say whatever comes to his mind.
Oh, yeah?
And then he's going to have you ready to play, so.
Yeah.
That's hard to do, though. I mean, coming up with a different message so you don't sound stale, like in a bunch of 20-year-olds. You know what I mean? Like, that's not easy.
We get the message.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. We get the message.
So you came in, and now you're like the lead dog back there. What has changed for you, not just in the fact that you're taking more snaps than any running back, but what's changed for you mentally and in your personal life? And you're 3 or 4 years ago, you were a different dude. Now, tell me, if you looked at yourself now, as opposed to where you were just 2 or 3 years ago, what do you think you would notice is the biggest difference?
I mean, just the growth every year, you know, coming in my rookie year, playing, but not like as much. Then my second year, going to the Pro Bowl and, you know, doing good things, running over 1,000 yards. And I mean, this year the goal is just keep going, you know, keep getting better every week. And I mean, I feel like I have been doing that, and I'm just going to keep continuing to do it.
Yeah. And getting in the end zone an awful lot more this year too, which is really cool. Yeah. Speaking of getting into the end zone, we heard that there was a tad bit of disappointment that someone did not win Angry Runs in week 8 when your 7-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter at Seattle knocked Ernest Jones' helmet clean off his head. Still didn't get you the scepter. Do you have anything to say on the matter to address this subject?
Kyle, you got us. You supposed to have been in Buffalo this year, but we're going to get one.
Yeah. All right. I mean, you and Deion actually won one together.
Yeah,
we're supposed,
we supposed to win one again this year.
Yeah, because Deion was right there with you on that. Always... So you were thinking run it back, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll rip Kyle a little bit. We'll make sure he gets
Kyle,
this.
I hope you see this.
Yeah. So you just came in and you got a chance to say hi to Thurm on his way out. What and you, if you don't say Thurman, that's okay. We won't tell him.
Yeah.
Who was your guy growing up? Who was your running back that you looked up to? I mean, everybody has one of those guys, right?
I mean, like growing up when I was a kid, you got guys like LT,
right?
You know, guys like that who I looked up to that can do what I do,
right?
And you know, that's who I looked up to.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna
LaDainian Tomlinson.
That's
a good one.
Let's hit you with a lightning round of questions here, so you can just keep hitting me with short answers on these, okay? So here we go. Number one, James, what feels better, rushing touchdown or receiving touchdown?
Rushing.
Like contact, is that the thing? Or
I mean, to be honest, any touchdown is a good touchdown.
Yeah, but rushing feels better just because
that's
the core of who you are.
You got it.
Yeah.
Out the mud.
Yeah. Former Georgia running back whose game you most admire?
That's a hard one. We all have different styles, so I don't really.
Yeah.
I've always heard Chubb's very highly respected, not only because of the back he was, but all the comebacks. He's made like three comebacks from major injuries. That's insane. Right. Yeah. Just did it again. Who is faster, James Cook or Dalvin Cook?
James Cook.
By a lot or a little?
Check the 40 times.
Which former college teammates, besides the ones in your own locker room, do you text and keep in touch with the most?
Kyaris Jackson.
Okay. Pre-game meal you cannot do without?
Pre-game meal, rice and chicken.
Rice and chicken?
Rice and chicken.
Okay.
How's the chicken fixed? Is it baked?
Baked.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
When was the last time you shouted out loud? Because you're a very quiet guy. I don't think people even believe you shouted any or raise your voice.
I just did today in practice.
Oh, you did? Okay.
What was it?
Like, that's just because of relief.
For a call?
Practice was over.
When was the last time you had a haircut? How long have you been growing?
I don't get haircuts during the season because my helmet kind of messed with my helmet. So I just kind of...
Let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then favorite time of the week to play? Sunday at 1, Sunday at 4, Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night?
I like to play at 1 o'clock because I get to enjoy the rest of my time off.
Oh, the rest of the day. You still got the evening and dinner and I got you. Yeah. Last one, favorite nickname from childhood, high school, college, or pros? What's your favorite all-time nickname that you've been given that you felt fit you well?
Jay.
Jay? Just Jay?
J-A-Y.
J-A-Y.
Okay.
All right.
Where was that one? Was that in?
My family.
Oh, your family gave it to you.
Oh, that's nice, yeah. So it should be.
All right. So now last question comes from the fans. This week's Timbits Timeout, presented by, of course, Tim Hortons, where we solicit the fans to ask Bills players a unique question. This one comes from Steve, and the question is, the Mafia is a special breed. Is the fan atmosphere better in Georgia or in Buffalo?
I say it's the same because, you know, is Georgia a little bit bigger stadium, so
that's right.
They both the same.
Georgia's got a big
stadium. Yeah. So it's kind of louder in Georgia because of that. But I say they're both the same, both wild and nuts. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people say that when they come here, it reminds them of a college football game. The fans here. Now, this stadium, to your point, it only seats 71 and change, and down there it's 92 and change. Yeah. So it's like almost 20,000 more people. And they got the big fourth quarter thing. The lights go out. The red lights come on.
Yeah.
That whole jazz, that's like their thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And we got Mr. Brightside in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So
that's right. Do you partake in the Mr. Brightside stuff?
No, I don't.
I don't feel like that's in.
Yeah, I don't.
That's in the tight ends music wheelhouse, right? Those are the guys that are all about it. Yeah. Are they literally singing the thing in the huddle?
No, they is every song.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, every not just that one?
No, the whole no, oh, not the every whole, song. They know the that whole one. They know the whole song.
Yeah, I believe it. Because we can see from the we're wondering if they're singing the whole thing.
Yeah,
so, okay. Confirmed by James Cook.
Hey James, thanks for coming in, man. It's
no
great
problem.
Seeing you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We'll make sure that Kyle hears from you. So
yeah,
you just
yeah.
take care of stuff on the field. We'll make sure he gets the message.
Yeah, I got
we'll
you,
send
Cal.
Him the clip, man.
That's James Cook joining us here in studio on One Bills Live. We'll take a break. Be back with more. Stay tuned.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't think that's a very good attitude.
It's Mike Shope.
You don't think? You don't think? I don't think you should be butting in when I'm talking to my team. You're my assistant, okay? You're supposed to back me up and go get me juice boxes when I tell you. Now go get me a juice box.
You know who you're talking to.
It's the Bulldog.
I'm talking to the juice box guy.
You're crazy.
I'm not crazy. I'm just thirsty.
Why don't you go to hell?
No, you go to hell. While you're there, why don't you grab me a juice box?
I'm no juice box boy, I'll tell you that.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you
it's
are.
Mike Shope
I'm not.
And the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Yeah, sure, whatever they said. Hey, good to have you with us. Good afternoon. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope has a couple of days off. And Nate Geary's here pinch hitting, which is awfully
Hi.
Nice. I always, I don't know if I say this on the air. I usually privately tell you. Like it means so much to me that you answer the bat signal when I send it out.
Of course.
Really, love it. I mean, I'm fine doing shows by myself, but I like this way more.
Yeah.
So,
thanks
for making the time.
When I'm not here and I have to listen to just you, I'm like,
that's gotta be...
I really wish I was available for Bulldog. God, is he talking about that again?
Well, we'll see how today goes. I'm already regretting my choice of clothing. We're in that weird sort of temperature mm-hmm. where...
The flux.
Like, I'll just throw on a hoodie. I'm fine outside in a hoodie. It's 55 or 60 degrees. The hoodie's perfect. I can already feel the sweat building under my man boobs right
you
now
have
in,
to.
This, in this thing. And I don't have a t-shirt on underneath it. So like it's either shirts and skins or I'm going to sit over here, you know, bathing.
So I've actually figured out advice for people that will be sitting in this room for extended periods on how they should dress.
See, this might be very helpful because I've worked here for 25 years mm-hmm. and still don't really know what to do.
I yeah, clearly, think you I should this treat today. This room and sitting in this room like you are flying across the country.
I think this works.
You should treat it like you are taking a red eye from LAX to Buffalo Airport, Buffalo Niagara. That and if you do that, you will likely be comfortable. And when inevitably by 6 p.m., you have that film of
that airline
carbon
film.
That is just spewing from our mouths, where it's like, oh, I'm breathing in someone else's hacking lung. You start to realize this is just like you're in the cabin of an airplane in here. No. You are in the Air France general population where there are 9 people sitting next to each other mm-hmm. and coughing a lung into a puke bag. So if you treat it like that, you will be very comfortable in here.
See, a lot of that sounded like avoiding getting sick and not how to dress.
And
so I'm not sure.
I want to tell you that I was just speaking from direct experience.
I just want to move on.
It was incredibly specific, so I just want you to know I'm talking from experience.
It didn't really sound much like a hypothetical to me.
Yeah, it wasn't.
As it
yeah,
turns
it wasn't.
Out. Anyway,
yeah.
good to have you here.
Thanks, buddy.
We have a lot to do today. Our buddy Joe Ostrowski from BetQL will be with us in the 4 o'clock hour. 5 o'clock will be Sal Capaccio. We'll get a rundown from One Bill's drive today. Still, I think, a lot of concern around the receiving core moving into this Week 10 game at Indianapolis. So we'll cover that. We'll cover some of that before we even get to Sal at 5. And at 6, Paul Hamilton will come in and ruin everything. The Sabres play tonight in New York against the Rangers. So pregame show will roll at 6 for that with all the usual stuff, of course, including Paul leading us off. So that's the lay of the land. Phone lines are available if you want to get in. We're going to be talking some football. Don't worry. It's not going to be what to wear on an airplane and/or hosting a radio show.
But that'll also be included.
It's
you get everything.
It's value added.
That's right.
803-0550 is the number. Here's where I wanted to start. Mike and I, I don't know, a week or two ago, had a decent amount of traction with our audience and just enjoyed talking about it ourselves, about how we were feeling about the Bills here. At this point, it's obviously after 9 games, heading into week 10, versus how we felt about them at the beginning of the season, like in the summer, rolling into September, like before the first game of the year, like what our expectations were, what is possible, just anything in that realm. And I think, you know, you and I haven't been together since the summer. Of course, we've been hearing you on, I know you were on from Batavia Downs on Saturday, right?
Was.
They had a great weekend out there. I talked to Ryan this week, and he said they had a fantastic Friday and Saturday. So kudos to you for pitching in that effort for them. How are you feeling about the Bills 9 games in here versus what maybe your expectations were back in September before the season began?
I think probably where I'd have to start is feeling pleasantly surprised about a couple of things. You know, I know you and I have sat here in years past and talked about, like, one specific thing when it's comparing your team to the Kansas City Chiefs, which is what you have to do. I mean, that's what every other AFC contender does. The Ravens are building a team to beat the Chiefs the same way the Bills are, the same way that the Bengals did. The Bills just didn't know that those two teams were capable of also beating you on your way to trying to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. But we talked about, and I've talked about, like, that Chiefs team has a Hall of Fame head coach, maybe the best offensive-minded head coach in NFL history, has, when it's all said and done, probably the best quarterback ever, or at least in that conversation, right? They have a Hall of Fame best-ever pass-catching tight end. They have a Hall of Fame top five interior defensive lineman of all time. And then they have supplemented really good players that they extract the value out of and then trade at the top of their value. I'm thinking of like L'Jarius Sneed, for instance, right? They move on from Sneed before he gets paid. He's an okay player now, but they traded him at his peak and they got maximum value in return, and they drafted his replacement in Trent McDuffie, who is right up there with one of the best corners in football. They decided that, yeah, Tyreek Hill's really great, but we're going to move off of him and do this thing by committee. And we're going to have a great offense. We're going to run the football and blah, 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 all that crap, right? And where I started my concern this offseason began at, not only did you fail to beat, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs in your defined window, you failed to close the gap in talent. And this year it was very obvious to me that the talent gap was larger than it had been since Allen and Mahomes really had this rivalry going. But what you can't take into account is guys that will just get better. All you can do is take it on face value. And what we had at face value was, Ed Oliver's a pretty good player. Is he great? Greg Rousseau's a pretty good player. Is he great? We think Dalton Kincaid could be great. We think Khalil Shakir can be a number one receiver. We think Connor McGovern can move over to center and it'd be fine and move David Edwards into left guard. Right. We think Taylor Rapp's going to be able to, you know, be more athletic than Jordan Poyer. You know, we think Terrell Bernard is as good as he was last year and maybe he'll be better. So all of a sudden, we think Christian Benford is a legitimate zone. All of these things came together. Not every single one. Kincaid isn't the best tight end in football, and you know. But I think what we're seeing here in Buffalo, or this point, as I think I'm bringing it back home to why I think I feel differently today than I did, you know, maybe in training camp, is this is a very, very well coached football team, from top to bottom, from position coaches to coordinators to head coach, and this year, I think you're seeing the value of continuity, of development, more than ever. And it's not just Buffalo being the face of it. It's also other teams showing the opposite, where you have coaches for teams that are talented that can't seem to get them to success. New York, the Raiders. Like, you have these coaches where it's like the Raiders have one of the, if not the best defensive player in the NFL, and they have the worst defense in the league. They spent a lot of money and they've got lots of the draft picks. And so there is something to be said about Brandon Bean has maybe not hit the home run. They haven't gotten a Brian Burns. They haven't drafted a Trent McDuffie. But they've gotten, I mean, James Cook's a top seven back, top eight back in the league. Kincaid is a top 10 tight end. They've got enough players that can help across the roster. And I still think this was the one area that Brandon Bean figured out is you've got to have depth. And they've got great depth. They were able to overcome the injuries early. So I guess where for me is it is shined through their ability to develop, their ability to coach. And sure, there are shortcomings. There is going to be shortcomings. But for not being the most talented team in their division, they are blowing this division out. And they are not the most talented team in this division. They might be the third most talented team in this division. But they're the best coached.
Third most talented team in the division.
I mean, do the Bills have a player as good as Jalen Ramsey on the roster? Tyreek Hill?
Okay, no.
The tops of their roster, they are more talented. The Bills are deeper than both the Jets and the Dolphins.
No, that's right. That's the point. Yeah. Okay, right. I don't know why I'm pushing back.
They've got star power. Bills really, they've got Josh Allen.
Yeah. Everything else is just kind of
They are pieced together really well. They are just a well-built machine. They got guys that buy in. All you have to do is listen to Jordan Phillips, who's left again and then came back, talk about, well, I don't know, I'm going to get my best football here because I'm wanted here. Like that, there is something to be said about when guys get here in the system, they play their best.
Yeah. The point about the continuity, I feel like, really shined through. You mentioned it. The early injuries, right? When Jamarcus Ingram and Cam Lewis have to play, and not only do they play and the Bills get by, but they're like Jamarcus Ingram's got a pick six and Cam Lewis is making plays. And those are guys that if you're turning your coaching staff over, even just one time, while those guys are early in their time on the practice squad, they're probably in the wind.
Yeah.
Right? But they're here. They're under the same group, same coaches, mostly, at least theoretically, the same system for sure. Might be different position coaches year over year in their time here. But they're given this breath to develop, and it helped them. I mean, I don't think those are guys that I want to have to count on necessarily all the time, but when they were called on this year, they did the job, and that's what really matters. And hopefully here the Bills can get through like this receiver room right now with Coleman in question, at least for this week, and Cooper, I think, in question, at least for this week, if not longer. Like, I don't know if he's even catching passes yet, Cooper. Yeah. Like that. So
seems like he's not.
I don't know how much of a long shot that is for him. But hopefully they didn't get through that, because what you're hoping for, I think, is that you had your bad luck with injuries early.
Last year it was late.
Late. I mean, they got clobbered late and were really on three wheels by the time they got to the Chiefs game in the playoffs. So you got to kind of hope for that, I think. For me, like, I'm also like surprised. I thought they'd be good. I liked them to win the division. For me, a part of that was I was never a believer in the Jets.
No, me either. I mean, I was not.
I thought they'd be duking it out with the Dolphins, and Tua's injury likely submarined that.
Even then, so I don't think they're good.
Yeah, you're probably right, but I thought it could be about like last year, right?
I talked
about
this. Because
they don't have to beat good teams to have a good record.
That's right. And I talked about this with Sal actually in the broadcast booth Sunday. We were both talking about the Dolphins, and him and I both, like, really dating back to training camp, were like, man, it is, and maybe it's just because the Bills have won this division so much that all of the conversation all offseason was the Bills lost a lot. The Dolphins lost way more than the Bills did. Way more, like, impactful players. The Bills lost a lot, but they were not impactful players anymore.
I don't think the Bills lost anyone as important as Wilkins.
Correct. Or even Robert Hunt. They didn't replace it, and they went out there and scoffed at everybody and said, well, Tua gets rid of the ball quickly. We don't need an offensive line. Okay. How's that worked for you? I mean, the Bills were playing a Tua-led The Dolphins should have lost their opener against the Jags. Jags pissed that game away. They should have been 0-1 going into that game, and they were getting routed.
Yeah.
And Tua was, in that moment, Tua was like, I think I got to do something special here because we're getting embarrassed again at home. in prime time. And then, you know, he put his head into Mar Hamlin's chest and the rest is history. It's just like the Dolphins lost more than people thought. They also scapegoated a defensive coordinator who, by the way, is the architect of modern day defense and said, well, no, it's his fault that and none of these guys want to play for him. And then they brought somebody else in and they're worse. Mm-hmm. So maybe it wasn't the architect of two high safeties that was the problem in Miami.
So as I was saying there, like I'm pleasantly surprised by the record. And I also feel like despite that the Chiefs are looming there at 8-0 and, you know, obviously still have not lost a game. So I recognize the Bills are, you know, they got some work to do to catch them. But all it takes here, I mean, can I get a Denver upset here in week 10 while the Bills are playing the Colts and hopefully taking care of business? I did not expect for it to be November and to be thinking about the one seed. I just sort of felt like Baltimore and Kansas City are more loaded. They're probably going to run away with that. I'll just bide my, you know, just play my wild card game at home and then see what happens after that is what I sort of expected this year. And, I in no way am saying the Bills are the favorite to be the one seed. I mean, they have a lot of work to do in their schedule after this Indy game, you know, gets – there's quite a few potholes sitting out there for them with the 49ers out there and the Lions out there. And I think even a trip to go play the Rams could be a really challenging thing with Nacua and Cooper Kupp and the way Stafford's slinging it around now. So you've got like a challenge, I think, to get to, say, 13 wins, which is probably what it's going to take at least to be the one. But to me, I don't want to close the door on it. Like I'm still thinking that's available to them. I just need a chief loss here somewhere to at least get me to where I can pass them a week from Sunday, and then it's just, you know, try to hold serve. And again, it'll be tough, but I didn't think at all I'd be thinking like that. And again, in 2 weeks, maybe we won't be, or I won't be at all, and then we'll turn our attention to, hey, how soon do you start resting guys? Right? It's going to become like NBA load management time, I think, because if the bye is off the table, being rested when the playoffs get here, I would say would be at a paramount.
I would tell you that my mind is not headed towards the one seed. Even with the Bills where they are, the Chiefs have a very easy schedule. I mean, they play Carolina. They're playing the Raiders. They're playing the Broncos twice, the Browns. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, there's a Charger game in there,
I think. Listen, I think that there's a real chance that they could be a one or two loss team and not be that scary.
Well, right, that's the other part of it. Like the quality within the conference itself, I don't feel, even though Baltimore curb stomped them, I don't feel like anybody out there looks too good for them.
It's the thing about the Chiefs that I think is just really impressive is they consistently win games without their fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Most teams, I don't really know a lot of teams that can win consistently when they don't have their fastball. The Bills cannot. Bills cannot win consistently when they don't have their fastball. They are the best. If they're not the best team, I don't know, because I don't know that I know what the Chiefs' fastball is. And I think that eventually will come back to haunt them, which is if their defense has to play incredible all the time and all Mahomes has to do is get the ball last, that could work for them. Like, Mahomes going to score last a lot. But not every time. Like, eventually, someone will stop them.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be surprising when it happens. But it will happen eventually. They...
I feel like every game they've played, they could have lost this year.
Yep.
And
but they don't.
While the Bills, you could, you know, the Bills have had, you know, their close calls, Miami here, Arizona, the Jet win. They've also murdered some teams. I mean, yes, bad teams, but they have murdered them. So I feel like, you know, style point wise, I just don't feel like there's that much of a gap, even though the Bills just can't seem to beat them in January.
I don't think the Ravens can win close games. And I think the Bills are not there. I think the Bills can win close games. I think they're better equipped to win close games than the Ravens are. But I think at the end of the day, if you were to ask me today which team is best equipped to beat Kansas City, I still think it's the Bills. I know the Henry aspect, and together those two are both MVP candidates. They were like the number one rush team in football last year.
Right.
And then they didn't run the football. And they're going to have to face the... Their defense is not good. The Ravens' defense is not good.
No.
And I don't know what happened in that Bills matchup. They became easier to defend because of the first play of the game for the Ravens. That's really, to me, the start of that game doomed them. And they didn't have a receiver that can disconnect or, you know, that could, could create any level of separation. But I still think at the end of the day, if you're asking me today, who's the team best equipped to beat the Chiefs if it was an AFC Championship game and I had to put money on one team, I would put it on the Bills over the Ravens. I still, that doesn't mean I think the Bills could beat the Ravens. If it's Bills-Ravens, that's not a good matchup for the Bills.
But no, it's definitely not a good matchup.
It's not a good matchup for the Bills.
What you need is for the offense to function.
Yes.
Like that, you know, you want to, you're not going to stop Derrick Henry by scoring.
Right.
But you know, at least you hold serve and like make it a game. And with their defense, is that why you say you think they're, because I mean, they won a really, you know, they won a last second game with Cincinnati. Is it the defensive weakness why you think Baltimore's not equipped to win close games? Because I feel like the best passing game in the league and the best running back in the league is a pretty good combination.
It is, but they know how to slow down Lamar. They know what to do in the pass game to get him off of his game, and they're gonna score enough points, and they're gonna take away your fastball, and that's what Spags does. He takes away your fastball. And if the fastball right now is Derrick Henry, which, by the way, I think it is, they can go back to, and Lamar can have a perfect passer rating in week 9, but when it comes to it in the playoffs, he has not performed as a passer. He just hasn't. That's just the statistics talking. That's not a bias. It's just he has not performed. And again, I think if it comes down to Kansas City's got the ball last, if it's a tied game or trailing by 3, that game's over. It's over. And I think that probably that way for the Bills, to be honest. If the Bills, just like I believed it would have been last year, it's why that field goal meant absolutely nothing to me last year. It's because it just did not matter. The ball was going to be in Patrick Mahomes' hands. And the people that'll argue, but at least you would have had a chance to stop him. Okay, I agree with that.
Sure.
You would have had a chance. But I think if you're going to beat the Chiefs, you need to score with no time left.
Yes. Yes, that's kind of where I'm at. Yeah, get a memo to Tampa, will you please? Because
it needs to be a Josh Allen tush-push with 0 seconds left, with 1 second left, snap the ball, fall forward, and then you'll convince me this team can beat the Chiefs in the playoffs.
There's very little margin for error in that scenario.
Makes the greatness of the Chiefs makes that is if they played a perfect game, I don't think anyone could beat them. They don't do that a lot, but they beat a lot of good teams with their C game.
They've done it a lot this year.
They've done it every game.
They won two Super Bowls in a row, maybe doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is tough to deal with. Nate Geary's in for Mike Shope. I'm the Bulldog. Lines are open. You want to get in on how you find? I know we sort of rehashed this a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, do some more of it here. It's just really just two dudes talking football, and you're welcome to make it a third dude or woman, whatever. 803-0550 is the number. Joe Ostrowski coming up at 4, Sal Capaccio at 5, Sabres pregame with Paul Hamilton at 6. That is what we've got for you. Again, lines open now at 803-0550 as we get rolling. We'll talk more about this matchup and the Bills' injuries as we go here as well. Nate Geary in for Mike, along with Zach Jones. I am the Bulldog, and this is WGR.